The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. Thank you, Carter Glass. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the July 2021 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month has been Hot Dog, the story of Smithfield's famous Franks. We're going to get to some other articles, and we're going to start out with the art of play. What was once a tobacco factory humming with machinery has been transformed into a showcase for the arts and sciences. A stage for performance and a hands-on space for kids that unlocks and unleashes their creativity. Written by Todd Delaney. When it comes to building blocks, I'm a bit of an expert. So I'm not surprised to catch my 7-year-old daughter, Una, stealing peeks at the 8-wheeled contraption I'm building at the drag race station in the Bricksburg hands-on exhibit at the Imperial Center for the Arts and Sciences. It is pretty impressive, if I do say so myself. When Una brings her modest attempt at a dragster over to where I'm working, I'm prepared to impress her with an impromptu physics lesson, inertia and resistance and all that stuff. You should build them small so they're easier to put back together when they break, she says bluntly. The gall. Then in our race down the exhibit's drag strip, my masterpiece disintegrates. Lesson learned. The Imperial Center in Rocky Mount is all about discovery and always has been. In 1999, after Hurricane Floyd destroyed the city's Children's Museum, Arts Center, and its playhouse, the community discovered that the 130,000-square-foot former tobacco factory, complete with a 90-foot-tall smokestack, would make an ideal and a dry home for a state-of-the-arts kids' museum, arts center, and a 300-seat theater. And today, I've discovered that Una knows more about everything here than I do, and she's very happy to share her knowledge. After a lap around the 8 activity tables that compose Bricksburg, on display through the summer on the first floor of the Kids Museum, we head upstairs for a crash course in foam megablock construction, a subject of which I don't even pretend to have any knowledge. What are you building? I ask. Well, something big, Una says, thankfully omitting the duh from the end of her response. Turns out she's building a giant chair, so I can sit down out of the way of her building project. From there, she heads to the bee exhibit to organize the plush versions of egg, larvae, pupae, and adult bees in their respective honeycomb cells. Note to self, maybe she'll organize her stuffed animals at home if we get her a giant honeycomb. And then it's on to a kid-sized gauntlet of sets for make-believe role-playing, from a farmer's market to a puppet castle to a doctor's office complete with a vision chart and waiting room. Let's measure your BMI, she squeals. Let's go check out the live animal gallery, I reply. We quickly discover that the biggest challenge at the Imperial Center is the budgeting of our time. Local kids have the advantage of being able to visit with their class or attend summer class here or to come with their families on Sunday when admission is free for Rocky Mount residents. But out-of-towners like us need to make the most of every minute, and I'm not planning to spend too much time playing. I mean, learning about the cyclone spinning in the tornado machine or the vacuum tube situation that sends balls whizzing through a labyrinth of clear pipes. Yes, the balls can get stuck, and yes, the staff has a special tool to get them unstuck, and no, don't ask how I know this. One of the places where time seems to fly is the aforementioned live animal gallery, the most popular attraction at the museum. Here, visitors learn about the different habitats, the effect of pollution on the planet, and the diversity of plants and animals across North Carolina. But it's the live animals that get kids excited, especially when a certain 7-year-old gets to feed the fish in the 2,800-gallon saltwater aquarium and pet the resident alligator. Yes, a museum assistant held the gator. No, Una's father did not pet said gator. An attraction that's a big draw for the entire family is the Cummins Planetarium, with its ooh and ah worthy seasonal stargazing shows and its comfy chairs that are a world away from the cacophony of excited kids just outside the doors. At this point, one might think that a 7-year-old would be slowing down after interacting with every science exhibit at least once and trying all the hands-on activities that the kids' museum has to offer. But one would be mistaken. A place like the Imperial Garden taps into children's energy reserves as much as their imaginations, which is a good thing since we've only experienced half of what the facility has to offer. The Arts Center, on the other side of the complex, provides gallery space for rotating exhibits and juried art shows, as well as inspiration for aspiring artists. Here, children can sprawl on the floor, stretching colorful versions of sculptures and photography created by artists from across North Carolina. Una finds coloring pages in an adjacent space that provides kids with opportunities to create their own art. Suddenly, time doesn't matter quite as much. Una will not be rushed when designing brightly colored ball gowns, but time is ticking away. I remind her that if she wants one last go in Bricksburg, we need to leave soon. With that, a familiar look of disappointment, verging on a full-out pout, begins to creep across her face. Don't worry, Una, I tell her. We'll be back. There's still plenty more to discover. Imperial Center for the Arts and Sciences is on Gay Street in Rocky Mount, North Carolina. Imperial Center, spelled T-R-E at the end, .org. And now, Brightleaf Hot Dogs in Smithfield. Frank's for the memories. Red hot dogs? It's a North Carolina thing. The Big Apple boasts no-frills, street cart dogs lined with mustard and kraut. Chicago packs its dogs with so many ingredients you can hardly see the meat. But our favorite Franks are those fire engine red, Brightleaf dogs made from a secret recipe at a sprawling factory in Smithfield, written by Billy Wharton. Nice picture here of all of the hot dogs hanging from racks. It says, near the end of the factory line, staffers sort the red hot dogs by hand, discarding any oversized, undersized, or otherwise misshapen Franks. The end result, a delicious bright leaf dog with all the fixings. So when the hot dogs are cooked, they appear to be strung end to end, like you've seen pictures of sausage, and then they're looped over a bar at the top. So I see four hot dogs strung end to end, and then there must be another four on the other side of the bar, and they're, of course, all side by side. There are hundreds of them in the picture. Red. It's the color of peak summer, the wardrobe of sass and flash. Red is speed, the stripes splashed across Richard Petty's classic 1973 Dodge Charger. Red is love, the roses presented to a blushing crush. In the form of an evening gown or a traffic signal, red commands attention. Red wants to possess and consume. Or, in the case of a famously red hot dog, it wants to be consumed. Since 1941, the Carolina Packers meat processing plant in Smithfield has produced Brightleaf hot dogs, each pork and beef frank bathed in the radiant red of a particularly rich sunset. But the actual moment when a bright leaf gets its signature hue is anything but poetic. It happens in a noisy space toward the back of the winding plant. Racks of regular old hot dogs, the color of wet sand, float via an elevated rail track into a steel-plated tunnel which shakes and shudders like something out of Willy Wonka's fanciful chocolate factory. Inside, red coloring showers down. And finally, behold, the Franks emerge in all their shimmering sunburst glory. Watching the process from the cement floor below is 37-year-old Kurt Bird. Serious and intense, his official title is Chief Financial Officer, but his duties encompass all manners of chores. Sometimes Bird lines up with fellow packers on the concrete loading docks to help box up or bag up the bright leaves for shipment to area grocers, as well as online customers in such far-flung locations as New York, Arkansas, and California. For Bird, as many in Johnson County, these wieners are a way of life. My grandfather worked here, Bird says, for 46 years, starting in the mid-50s. When he brought home the bacon, he was bringing it from this same plant. That's why I feel so strongly about being here. It's a tradition that we're passing on. Hot dog fans throughout the region swear by bright leaves with a vigor that's akin to the way many North Carolinians pledge allegiance to college basketball teams. The Franks are associated with everything from church revivals to first dates. Eating red hot dogs goes so far back here, I don't even remember not eating them, says Jeff Holt, the 57-year-old mayor of Pine Level. Just 10 minutes east of Smithfield, it's a source of pride and identity. We were nursed on them. Devotees fry the dogs. They grill them, boil them, sprinkle them in casseroles, and even chomp them down raw. In addition to the eye candy of the bright leaf's red hue, these diehards say the flavor is a treat that your average Oscar Mayer just can't match. A factory storeroom is piled high with the secret spices that give all bright leaf hot dogs both the company's line of original red dogs and its shorter, fatter, extra spicy red hots their tongue-tingling taste. They're sweeter than an all-beef hot dog, says Ashby Brame of the Johnston County Visitors Bureau, which has made the wieners a big part of its marketing pitch. Not candy sweet, though. They're tangy. The magic of Bright Leaf's hot dogs doesn't end with the color and the flavor. There's even the feel of packaging. Conventional Franks come in vacuum-sealed packages, which are designed to prolong the shelf life of the product, but have all the charm of an annual report. Bright Leaf Originals come loose in bags of 10 or 20. What's special about it is not only the look and feel, Bird says, proudly hoisting a bag out of a nearby refrigerator and rolling it in his fingers, but also in the air, or rather the air in the bag, further cures and develops the seasoning and gives you more flavor. The Bright Leaf legend began in 1939 in an attempt by Johnston County leaders to establish a meat processing plant that would fire up the economy. To launch the venture, backers tapped John A. Jones, an executive from Georgia who'd apparently relished a red hot dog in the Savannah area and decided to take the same approach here, keeping the color but changing the spice mix, which remains Johnson County's most closely guarded secret. 2 years later, the Scarlet Lynx took off, along with an array of other pork products. Today, 15 refrigerated trucks deliver to the coast, where, during beach season, red hot dogs seem in greater demand than sunscreen, and as far west as Hickory. A few triangle spots also carry Bright Leaf hot dogs, too, including Wegmans and Walmart. Those who grew up wolfing down Bright Leaf's red hot dogs make eager evangelists, including Bird. Of the many jobs he holds at Carolina Packers, his favorite seems to be serving samples to curious passersby at hot happenings like the North Carolina State Fair. Bird and a colleague unfurl a banner emblazoned under the Bright Leaf logo, then cook up the dogs on a pancake griddle. We get them good and charred, get a good black streak down them, Bird says, his voice rising with excitement. Then we cut them up and toothpick them for people. And that's when the magic strikes, like a screaming red fireball. When someone tries a red leaf for the first time, the look on their face is priceless, Bird says, especially folks from up north. At first they say, "It's really red. I don't know about this." And then they bite into one, and it's wow. You're listening to Our State Magazine on the North Carolina Reading Service. Comments, questions, 919-832-5138. There are some sidebars in here. Actually, there's quite a few sidebars in here. Let's hit them up next. Don't miss this in Smithfield. Double Barley Brewing. Sit down for handcrafted ales and food in a space made for the community to enjoy meaningful time together. Featuring an inviting tap room and beer garden, this family-operated brewery specializes in bold-flavored beers with a whole lot of grain. Double Barley lets patrons go behind the scenes of their craft beer-making process in weekly tours. They're in U.S. Highway 70 West, DoubleBarleyBrewing.com. Also in Smithfield, Frank Creech Art Gallery. This gallery aims to educate and entertain visitors through its culturally diverse, fine and visual arts programming. With four exhibits each year, the gallery shows an appreciation for various art forms in Smithfield and Johnson County. Lectures and artist workshops throughout the year are part of the gallery's mission to help the local artistic community grow. They're on College Road, and they have a very long URL. So you can look up Frank Creech Art Gallery if you're interested. Overleaf now. Get your hot dogs. Brightleafs are so popular in Johnston County, JOCO if you're sassy, that the Visitors Bureau cooked up the local red hot dog trail, with many of the choice spots just a jump off I-95. The Old Time Grills, 101 West Wellens Street in Four Oaks, the aptly named Old Time Grill, originally Thornton's, dates back to 1946 and comes with a wall of vintage photos to prove it. While tucked into one of the tiny hot spots two booths, you can marvel at a black and white portrait of what may be the largest hog ever raised and slaughtered in the area. He weighed 1,305 pounds, notes grill owner Robert Smith, who estimates that he fries up between 800 and 1,000 Brightleaf hot dogs a week. I do homemade hamburgers and lemonade, but Brightleafs are my main thing, says Smith, who makes a good company if you mosey in solo. They're the best in North Carolina, according to me. Cricket's Grill is at 506 East Market Street in Smithfield. Situated smack in the middle of downtown, Cricket's offers Brightleafs, other short-order staples, and abundant color. Leaning out the front window of the bright yellow and white trailer that houses the walk-up grill, one of the two attendants half hollers and half sings to a waiting customer, "Sir, your order's here, baby." Next to the window, a sign proclaims, "Cricket's, guilty of having the best hot dogs in town." Another advises, "Cash only, but not to worry, as a well-worn on-site ATM can help." "They need to put a Cricket's in Pine Level," says 74-year-old Joyce Pulley, who regularly makes the 15-minute drive for her Brightleaf Frank's Fix. Also nearby, and well-stocked with red-hot dogs, are Millie's, 109 South Brightleaf Boulevard, and Zach's Char Grill, 618 East Market Street. How about the grocery bag on North Carolina Highway 42 East in Clayton? This grill and convenience store is to red hot dogs as Sun Records is to rock and roll, temple for the faithful, and a point of pilgrimage for far-flung fans. No fewer than 7 wiener workers are required behind the counter to keep up with the demand. The grocery bag moves anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 dogs per day to locals and fresh arrivals alike, according to owner Donna Fitzgerald. "Every day we see new people coming in saying, 'We heard you sell red hot dogs,'" she says. "And if you suspect the Brightleaf's base of believers is aging out, think again. Strolling from the busy counter to a booth, Alden Carpio, 18, totes four red hot dogs, all for himself. Been a rough day, he says with a shrug. Jones Cafe is at 415 East Main Street in Clayton, an iconic neighborhood landmark since 1958. Jones Cafe offers more of a diner vibe, with ownership going back three generations. You can't miss the place. Just look for the mustard yellow building with a black awning and bright leaf hot dogs splashed across its front windows and lobby. And finally, Daddy Bob's Barbecue, 333 North Raleigh Street in Angier. Or is it Angier? Not sure. While Joco is Carolina Packers' home turf, it is by no means holding a monopoly on Red Frank Fever. Just across Harnett County line, Daddy Bob serves up Bright Leafs with an array of toppings, including three kinds of slaw, regular jalapeno, and barbecue, as well as a rich cheese sauce. And now one more article. Don't know if we'll get all the way through, but we'll try. Baseball is back. A minor league team returns to its new home stadium this year after the pandemic disrupted its 2020 season. Now Fayetteville Woodpecker fans can continue making joyful summertime memories of hot peanuts, booming fireworks, and the sweet crack of bat against ball. Written by Stephen Schramm. Growing up in Lenoir County, John Tyndall's love of baseball took root on a summer night alongside his father on the wooden seats of Kinston's Granger Stadium. Now Tyndall is planting the seeds for his teenage daughter, Carissa, to develop a similar affection. Something wrong with the text here. I'm not having the same result, to be honest. He says she's not a baseball person yet, but Tyndall, who lives in the nearby Cumberland County community of Stedman, notes that whenever he asks Carissa to go to a Fayetteville Woodpeckers game, she gives an enthusiastic yes. I think we'll get there, he says. In baseball, as in everything, relationships grow over time. For the Woodpeckers in Fayetteville, time isn't something they've had a lot of. A low A affiliate of the Houston Astros, the Woodpeckers were born when the Carolina League expanded in 2017. For its first two seasons, the team played as the Buies Creek Astros at Campbell University, while its permanent home, Segra Station, rose from what was a weathered parking lot on the western edge of downtown Fayetteville. Roughly 250,000 fans passed through the stadium during the Woodpeckers' giddy first summer in 2019. Then the pandemic wiped out the 2020 campaign, meaning that the city's relationship with the team is still relatively new. But with each fond memory created on game nights, that bond grows stronger. A more recent memory happened during the Woodpeckers' 2021 home opener in May, which found the team defeating the Kannapolis Cannon Ballers 10-1 at a sold-out Segra Stadium. Tyndall's favorite Woodpeckers memory is of Carissa and her Girl Scout troop getting to camp on the field after a game. Another Woodpeckers fan, Ivan Williams, who works in IT in Fayetteville State University, fondly remembers running into old friends on the stadium concourse and in the stands. I didn't realize I knew that many people until I started going to baseball games, he says. And Fayetteville resident Franco Webb still chuckles about the night his buddy Teddy proposed to his girlfriend Tori between innings atop the home dugout. It's important to have these touchstones, Webb says. If you want to go to the games, to be able to say, hey, remember when? Fayetteville has a colorful, albeit fleeting, professional baseball past, but there are precious few tangible reminders of that history. The Cape Fear Fairgrounds, where the short-lived Fayetteville Highlanders played centuries ago, is now the North Carolina Department of Transportation's Highway Division 6 headquarters. It's also where, legend has it, the first professional home run hit by Babe Ruth splashed down in a nearby mill pond. In the 1940s, Pittman Stadium, initially Cumberland Memorial Stadium, was built on the northwestern outskirts of the city and briefly hosted teams named the Athletics, Cubs, Highlanders, and Scotties. It's now a Ford dealership off Busy Bragg Boulevard. From 1987 to 2000, J.P. Riddle Stadium, which still sits among the pines and parking lots on the south side, provided 14 summers of minor league memories as home to the Class A Fayetteville Generals and the Cape Fear Crocs. Fayetteville Technical Community College plays there now. That history was on the minds of city leaders who, when negotiating Fayetteville's agreement with the Astros, won a guarantee that the team would stay at Segra for at least 30 years. "We wanted this to be a lifetime investment," says former city council member Jim Arp, who worked on the deal. "We want kids who live here to stay in Fayetteville and one day bring their kids to the games." On game nights, Segra Stadium, named a ballpark of the decade at Ballpark Digest, is full of life. "It's great atmosphere," says Fayetteville Mayor Mitch Colvin, who chaired the city council's baseball committee. "There's so much going on in addition to the baseball. Indeed, the right field patio bar stays buzzing with foo-ball, cornhole, and live music. Kids burn off energy in the play area and on the grassy hill beyond left field. In between, rows of rocking chairs beckon those who just want to sit. And with rail tracks running alongside two sides of the stadium, passing trains compete for fans' attention. To see this energy in downtown Fayetteville at what was a parking lot just a few years ago, it's wonderful," says Fayetteville native George Brees, who bought the very first season tickets. That energy extends beyond the stadium. Next door, the once derelict Prince Charles Hotel, a landmark since the 20s, now features luxury apartments and a gourmet coffee shop. Nearby restaurants, breweries, and shops have led Fayetteville residents and visitors to rediscover downtown. Brees, who lives near the downtown area, rarely misses a game. But on the few weekend nights that he does, he loves hearing the booms of Segra Stadium's post-game fireworks. They mark the end of another night of Woodpeckers baseball, another fresh set of memories made for a city and a team that will be together for years to come. Segra Stadium is on Hay Street in Fayetteville. They have a website, a little hard to read the name here. I think it's MILB.com/Fayetteville. Advertisement here, don't pass us by. Smithfield, North Carolina, exit 95 on I-95. They have a website. Visit smithfield.org if you don't really know why you might want to go there, I guess. Or you could talk to folks at St. Joseph of the Pines, SJP. That's SJP.org for nationally accredited life plan communities. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.